Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast, monthly album roundup for the month of November 2017. I'm your host, Robert. I saw Devin Townsend live last night. All is right with the world. And with me, I have...
I'm Alex. And apparently, according to our president, we just never celebrated Christmas before. Who knew?
And...
I'm working. Why does Skype update my shit, but yet I keep getting people like, wait... Okay, Skype is confusing. Microsoft's confusing.
I can see why the other guys probably wanted to move to Discord.
Yeah.
And I probably would move Mark there too, but I don't trust the quality of voice chat there. For now, at least. But whatever, it is what it is. So, yeah, like I said, I saw Devin Townsend. It was so much fun.
You saw them a year after I did. Barely never, right?
Well, he said it himself. He hadn't played in, like, that venue in, like, 6 years. Jeez, you know what was, like, 6 years ago?
Yeah.
Actually, I don't know what was 6 years ago. That was, like, before the first Avengers, even. Hot damn.
2011. It feels like an eternity ago, doesn't it?
Not to mention, I caught Devin's pick. It's perfectly triangular for some reason. Seriously, like, this would be like in a math problem as like an equilateral triangle. And okay, why am I stalling with math? Get it together, buddy.
Don't know.
You only got a couple more weeks. But anyway, yeah. So obviously, currently it's December, so everybody's in the middle of list week. But we obviously still have some cleaning up to do for the past month before we get to work on all that. And you know, November obviously still had some more. Like, big stuff there, clearly, you know, we still gotta send this year out with a bang somehow, although, you know, it'd probably be better for, like, artists who had albums in December to just dump them in November, because, seriously, who's gonna listen to a new Eminem album in the middle of the year? You should've just dropped it in November, like Wikipedia said you would, you bastard!
Marshall Mathers.
Makes my job more difficult. But, yeah, obviously the last, big month before everybody starts turning in their best of the year lists, even though, come on, we haven't even had a Death Grips album yet. But yeah, so let's actually get to the first order of business here. Let's actually recap what in the fuck actually did come out this past November. Starting at the top with some of the big pop releases, there was a new Tove Lo album with Blue Lips, there was the return of Maroon 5 with Red Pill Blues. No, I don't think any of us actually listened to that one.
Okay. No.
Nope.
Thank God. Of course, there was a new Sia Christmas album, Every Day is Christmas. There was a new Seal album, Standards. A mini album of sorts from Sleigh Bells called Khrushchev. Of course, Sam Smith's second studio album, The Thrill of It All. The Most Perfect Person Who Ever Lived, Bjork, with her newest album, Utopia. And then there was also Taylor Swift with Reputation. And now let's move on to some of the big rock releases. Of course, we had album Numero Cuatro from King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard with Polygon Dwana Land. We had a new album from Walk of the Moon titled What If Nothing. Bare Naked Ladies had a new release called Fake Nudes. That douchebag Morrissey with a new album Low in High School. Punk rockers Anti-Flag with their newest album, American Fall. And, of course, the first new Quicksand album in over 20 years with Interiors. Now let's move on to some of the big metal and hard rock releases of the past month. Of course, Black Metalers Moonspell with 1755. Tooth Grinder dropping their newest studio album, Phantom Amour. There was the new Evanescence album. I mean, new in a sort of roundaboutish sense with Synthesis. Like Moss the Flame with Dark Divine, a new EP from Zhao with Pyrrhic Victory, Sect, a group that has a drummer from Fall Out Boy in it, with No Cure for Death. Of course, there was a shadow drop from Kralis, because they always shadow drop something around this time of year, with Go Be Forgotten if you need your experimental black metal needs met. Oh dear God, do I really have to say this fucking title again?
Say it.
Fieldy from Korn with basically.
Get it? Get it? It's a pun! Get it?
Dude, that's like some Calchichesta shit. Of course, there was the newest collaborative effort from experimental doom metalers The Body and experimental grindcore act Full of Hell with Ascending a Mountain of Heavy Light. The newest album from industrial metal titans Godflesh with Post Self. Black Sabbath worshippers Electric Wizard with Wizard Bloody Wizard. Metalcore titans Converge with their newest album, The Dusk in Us. And of course, we had a new Cannibal Corpse release, Red Before Black. Now, let's move on to a handful of the big hip-hop releases from the past month. Well, hip-hop and R&B. There was a new collaborative album from Fabulous and Mr. Why Did Bush Knock Down the Towers, Jadakiss, with Friday on Elm Street. Professional Swedish sad boy Young Lean with his newest album, Stranger. Talib Kweli dropped a new album, Radio Silence. Double XL freshman PNB Rock with Catch These Vibes. Of course,
fans.
Yeah, catch him. Autotune Master T-Pain with Oblivion, spelled with weird, awkward capitalizations because reasons. Mr. Kaz Kan himself, Jaden Smith, with the new studio album Sire, his debut full length, if I recall correctly. Singer Mavis Staples with If All I Was Black. And of course, the newest album from rapper Hobson with No Shame.
There will be shame.
Soon. And then, of course, a few of the stragglers that don't fit neatly into one other categories, though most of these are kind of folky country things. A new collaborative album from Tim McGraw and Faith Hill with The Rest of Our Life. Synthwave Master Dan Terminus with Automated Refrains. Adult Swim Wonderkin Tim Heidecker with Too Dumb for Suicide, Tim Heidecker's Trump Songs. Why couldn't this have been a new Dakar album? I don't know. Mr. Billy Ray Cyrus with Set the Record Straight. And former Senate candidate Kid Rock with Sweet Southern Sugar. So, yeah, that's basically the recap. Obviously, there was some big stuff in there, some smaller things, and Tim Heidecker for some reason. But yeah, now it's time to actually move on to people discussing what we actually did listen to and our opinions and stuff. So as always, Alex will warm us up here.
Okay. I don't have a whole lot to present to the platform forum here because, well, not a lot interested me this past month. It's been a very uneventful month for me. And also, I've been locked away playing Pokemon for the past couple weeks. So, you know, that's been eating up a lot of my time.
Yep, sounds about right.
But nevertheless, I have two releases to talk about. One a sort of new album, and the other a box set re-release, which is filled with a whole lot of goodies. You can probably tell where I stand when it comes to listening to music. I'm very much akin to my comfort zone, most of the time anyway.
Really? I never would have guessed.
So yes, first up, I would like to talk about this super fancy box set of arguably the greatest metal album ever made, Master of Puppets.
Oh, right, that did come out already.
Yes, and I actually don't own the box yet because, well, obvious reasons regarding money. But, right. Thankfully, the audio contents of this box set are up on Apple Music, which I have on here. There's 137 separate tracks in this set, spanning 11 and a half hours of audio.
That's like half a day.
Damn.
Yes, it is. Everything from the whole album with a nice little remaster, to demos, to riff tapes, to work-in-progress mixes, to Jason Newsted's audition with the band, to Cliff Burton's final performance with the band from a fan bootleg. This is the kind of stuff I'm into, going into a backlog of a band's older eras to try and imagine myself within that time frame and within the set of, you know, these concerts, these moments. Like, you have the tour with Ozzy, you have the European tour, you have the shows in Japan with Jason Newsted coming in. It's such a radically different time compared to not just current Metallica, but, like, everything from And Justice for All onward. Like, the difference between Master of Puppets and Justice for All and their stage presence, it's incredible, because with Master of Puppets, everything is just raw and in your face, and with Justice, when they did that tour, everything became a lot more polished with a, I guess you could say, a grander presentation. Because I've been listening to a lot of these live tracks, both with Cliff and with Jason. Yeah, everything is just like a punch in the face over and over and over again. But I mentioned this when we brought up the box set in an earlier episode. What sold me on this was the inclusion of a fan bootleg of their show from Stockholm, Sweden, which was Cliff Burton's very last show with the band, because for the longest time on YouTube, there's been this video link of a bass solo that Cliff did. It was from this show. He did a solo of the Star Spangled Banner leading into Anesthesia Pulling Teeth, and it's just, it's been circling on YouTube forever, and when I first heard that, I was just blown away. Like, that's on bass? That's fucking amazing. But I don't have to say much about the Master of Puppets album as a whole, because I was just parroting what everyone else has said. It's beyond an influential metal album. It is 8 tracks of some of the tightest thrash metal you will ever hear. 55 minutes, boom to boom, forward to back. It runs the gamut. It goes through so many different, I guess you could say, musical emotions, because you have, you know, the frantic barrage of Battery, and you have the, I guess you could say, epic of Master of Puppets, where you have those sinister verses with this very nice clean section right in the middle. Dichotomy, perhaps? Of course, you have the inspiration of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest in Welcome Home Sanitarium, all the talk about televangelists in Leopard Messiah, of course Cliff Burton's magnum opus of Orion, and then Damage Incorporated just comes in and it goes back to the barrage of, you know, punches and kicks in your face. I don't have to say much more about Master of Puppets. It's one of these albums every metalhead, not just metalhead, but fan of heavy music, needs to listen and learn and just dive into. And with this box set, there's a lot more to dive into, from, like I said, the live tracks, the rough mixes, the demos, the riff tapes, everything. Then you got the DVDs, which thankfully someone on YouTube has been putting up. Oh, yeah. If you've never seen an interview with Cliff Burton, you have to. The guy is both laid back and eloquent and very upfront with, you know, what he believes he wants Metallica to be. It's, God damn it, he was taken way too soon. Way too fucking soon.
So what you're saying is this box set is absolutely mandatory for any Metallica completists out there?
Absolutely.
I might have to look into that.
Like I said, there is 11 and a half hours of audio. That's just the audio. There's like three hours of video content at least, with a freaking awesome little book of interviews and photos and all sorts of other miscellaneous goodies. Oh, yeah.
So, hey, if any of y'all know a Metallica fan and you're looking for a Christmas gift, there you go.
Crossing my fingers I can get this for Christmas or my birthday, or both. But this brings me to my second offering of the night. And this starts with a bit of a personal story.
Ew.
But I will prelude that with this statement. I was into Evanescence when they first started, okay?
Nerd.
Yeah, yeah, flipping, yeah. So yeah, Evanescence. They're a band that, well, to say they're turbulent is probably underselling it. This is a band that has been around almost 20 years in one form or another. and they've only released 3 studio albums, with their last one being from 2011. Mm. Yeah. So, Amy Lee's pet project, Evanescence, it's had some very big ups and downs, with band members going in and out like a revolving door for one reason or another. But, wouldn't you know it, the band has come back together, kind of, with mostly new members, and they've decided to come out of hiatus. They're going to reinterpret some of their older songs with a couple of new ones as well, in a very unique way, which brings us to Synthesis, the third and a half album, because I can't quite call it their fourth album since it's rearrangements of some of their older songs.
Yeah, 3.5 seems fair.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what's interesting about this is most of these songs are rearranged with a mixture of gothic orchestral arrangements and electronica.
Ew.
Yeah. It's a weird combination on paper, but in practice, you combine these dark, foreboding orchestras with, you know, electronic drums, I guess you could say bass drops, a lot of EDM beats, with Amy Lee's booming and powerful vocals, you have something very interesting to listen to. And it works. Somehow, some way, it works. So, obviously, since a lot of these tracks have, you know, actual songwriting techniques put into them, thanks to Ben Mooney and David Hodges, not a whole lot has to be reworked, which is good, since it's all kept in the same key, same tempo, same structure, same everything. It plays out like, if you've seen an orchestra performing concerts, there's always a certain flow to each piece that goes through, and I kind of know about that because I played middle school and high school orchestra. I know how it all works.
What instrument?
Cello.
I wish I could play the cello. It's that I play trombone.
Yeah. That was a trombone. But anyway. I lost my train of thought. Okay. Back on track. Damn it. What is wrong with me tonight? You brought up the trombone. Now that's all I can think about.
But yeah, you were talking about, like, the effortless fusion of, like, the orchestra with electronic drums arrangements.
Yeah. Yeah, so going into these songs, I will say I'm kind of a lapsed fan because, you know, this is a band that hasn't been around for, you know, 6 years. Although I do still hear Bring Me to Life on the radio every other day, it seems like, because iHeartRadio is weird like that. What's interesting to me is that Amy Lee did an interview which said that the quote-unquote rap verses in Bring Me to Life, you know, with the guy singing it, that was never the original vision for the song. That was a mandate from their label.
Yeah, so, that sounds about right.
Yeah, because, you know, you got to get the radio play. So on this album, those verses are gone because, okay, you know, why put in something you didn't want in the first place? And it sounds better that way. Like, it doesn't sound quite as cringy. I guess you could say clunky.
Okay, that too. I prefer cringy, because that's more honest.
Yeah. But what will sell people on this album is not, you know, the orchestral arrangements or the electronic style fusion going on here. It's Amy Lee's vocals. God damn it. Amy Lee is a fucking amazing vocalist. She has such a tremendous voice to her. That's what brought me to this band in the first place back in 2002. That voice. Oh god, that voice. And that's all I got. Just two solid picks from me, which cater to my personal comfort food tastes. And that's all I got. God damn it, I'm tired tonight.
Yeah, I don't blame you. It's kind of been one of those weeks. all around. Yeah. But who knows? Maybe soon you can relax by playing more Ultra Moon, or maybe jumping into the future and getting a copy of Mega Man 11 on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Nintendo Switch.
Well, I gotta get the Legacy Collection on Switch as well, and all the Mega Man X games. I'm gonna have 19 games to go through.
That's gonna be a fun way to spend that time.
Yeah. But
anyway, now, instead of Mark doing the middle part, I'm gonna take care of the middle part, because I got a thing to get to, but first I'm going to, of course, start off with my highlights, of which I have, about five. Three of which I actually bothered to, find copies of, whether physical or digital. So the first of these is, of course, the newest album from Miss Bjork with Utopia. Now, I gotta admit, I never really got into Bjork until, at the start of the year, because I do this thing, I may have mentioned it once or twice, where I try to listen to at least one new-to-me album a day, and Bjork was one of those artists who's always been on my checklist, but I kind of always got distracted by other stuff. But I know I have a couple friends who are, super into Bjork, you have no fucking idea. Shout out to Cindy and Nazareth if you're listening to this. And I finally decided, why not? Might be fun to check out. So I listened to all of her albums, excluding Post, because that was the one I actually heard before. And I found myself, really liking a lot of her stuff. Compositionally, a lot of it was very diverse and, often wavered between, sort of unnerving, almost kind of sci-fi industrialist with, these gorgeous melodies and, of course, her voice. That voice. So, when I heard she was producing a new album for later this year, which, need I remind you, she was promoting as her Tinder record, I'm still not entirely sure what that means, even knowing some of the lyrics of this thing, I got, interested and curious, and then when we finally got Utopia, I believe I listened to it pretty much that exact weekend, and, man, this was so good. So, first things first, much like her 2015 release Vulnicura, she's once again working with the Venezuelan electronic producer Orca, who himself had a pretty good solo outing earlier this year. And you might notice some similarities in the production between the two albums, especially on certain songs, I believe it's the song Courtship, I want to say, where there's kind of this very floaty vibe with these sort of low-key electronics that just vaguely carry it, but it still kind of feels floating above, everything. But as soon as you hit play on this thing, you are greeted by flutes! Fucking flutes everywhere! I'm not saying that as a criticism. I mean, hell, a lot of the flutes on this thing sound very gorgeously orchestrated. The arrangements are beautiful, and they contribute to this kind of very, almost kind of an alien vibe. This sounds like the score to a version of Avatar that isn't a bunch of unmemorable bullcrap. But although I should have expected that, if you see the album cover to this thing, not only does she go for a very kind of alien-esque appearance, but that is very much a flute she's carrying, which, is very on the nose. But yeah, the arrangements on this thing, they're just so gorgeous, fantastical, and beautiful. The flute melodies are very memorable all across, in songs like Features Creatures or The Gate, even the title track or Body Memory or something. It's just, she is one of the all-time great songwriters, which is part of why she's, I think, endured for this long. She always knows how to, whatever she's going for with each album, she has the songwriting talents necessary to nail it. And that just presence she has with her vocals where, it sounds very lush and gorgeous, almost like not of this earth, but there's enough character in her enunciations of everything to make it sound human. Especially on, as I said, The Gate, those elongations of I care for you, which I'm not going to do because I'm not going to disgrace the woman's legacy by trying to sing her music, even though I can't. But yeah, just, all in all, if you're looking for just a gorgeous musical experience on all fronts, then this is an album you absolutely need to look into. And maybe the rest of Bjork's discography too, but, one thing at a time. And now, moving on to album number two, which is technically album number 4 from this band this year. Yep, once again, King Gizzard, Lizard Wizard, Polygon Dwanaland. Now, every album they've released so far this year has had its own different identity and pretty much its own different sort of experimentation. Flying Microtonal Banana from, I believe it was April or February. That one was, of course, it says it in the title, was all about experimentation with the theoretical concept of microtonal tuning. Which maybe there'll be an Adam Neely video somewhere that explains it, but I wouldn't explain it here in dense terms. Murder of the Universe feels like it was on a dare to write something that was grosser than any death metal or grindcore effort out there. And then, of course, their collaboration with Mild High Club, Sketches of Brunswick East, was pretty much, you know, just some jazz. You kind of have to be super into jazz, I think, to be able to get something out of that one. And this one is no different. The big thing with this album was the release model. This album is not technically owned by the band. They said it themselves that they don't own it. They put it out for free on their website for literally everyone and anyone to, like, burn copies or make their own copies to sell if they want to. This is basically, like, public domain shit. So I guess they're playing around with the notion of, you know, ownership as it pertains to the 21st century. But as for the actual music, it seems to adopt a lot of the tendencies I've heard from, like, some of their previous efforts. Like, so when you start off with the opening track, Crumbling Castles, which, for the record, this album is, like, 44 minutes, and this opening track is a quarter of the runtime. So that's, like, 11 minutes of psychedelia, you know. You get a lot of these trill-heavy, noodling, clean guitar passages. I think I may have mentioned it when we talked about the song earlier. It almost kind of sounds like a psychedelic version of, like, the guitar work on Metallica's Injustice for All. Just how, like, liquid smooth a lot of those, you know, guitar melodies are. Rhythms that are like kind of a 5-4, maybe even a 5-8 type thing, that are also very dense because this is a band that I believe plays with two drummers. Not to mention, across this album, you get a lot of exotic percussive elements, primarily xylophones, or I think it's glass marimbas.
So it's a King Crimson thing.
Basically, yeah. Except, you know, Australian.
Right.
And, you know, you get a lot of these strange synth passages that kind of blare out, almost kind of like you're being besieged by, like, alien UFOs and stuff. And, of course, Stu McKenzie's vocals wavering kind of these low-key, like, monk chants and, like, these more boisterous traditional rock wails. And so you're listening to just the weird rhythmic switch-ups, including to, like, seven, eight times, and, like, you know, maybe a dash of 4-4 in there. The xylophones, bells, claves, flutes, all that, all this weird shit. Yeah, flutes, like, that flute's following me everywhere. Not to mention that trippy Black Sabbath-esque breakdown near the end. So you already know you're in for some crazy shit, but the rest of the album is a little bit, I'm not gonna say wholly, like, soft, but it is sort of subdued from something like, say, the more punk-esque energy of, like, Murder of the Universe, the more punk hard rock energy of that. And, you know, you're listening to that sort of go through the whole album. You know, like, the title track, which has the guitars being more clean without saturated production, it's very wispy with some acoustic guitars and more of the flutes. It almost kind of sounds like a folk tune more than anything else. Castle in the Air, which kind of has, like, the female voice thing from, like, some of the stories of Murder of the Universe, with some more lush vocal layerings, and definitely, like, the, I want to say it's like a lute or a ukulele or something. Then you get to other tracks like Horology or, like, Desert Dunes Welcome Weary Feet, where those are ones that push, like, a 7-4 rhythm at a little bit of a fast tempo, and those include synths that almost kind of sound more like a synth wave track, like, you know, some zombie type shit. And again, that's the thing that I think will stand out most to anyone who listens to it, just the rhythmic variation on this thing. Like, 4-4 is a sin that does not exist much on this record. Everything is either, like, 5-8s or 3-8s or 7-8s or 6-4. It's all over the place. Like, it's really crazy. Like, these guys just kind of throw everything at the wall to see what works, and it kind of does. Like, it works pretty damn well. I don't like it as much as Murder of the Universe, just because I kind of like the out there lyrical concept of that one. But if you're looking for some trippy musical odysseys, you're going to find them here, especially with other tracks like if you want some thematic connections here, Tetrachromacy or The Fourth Color. Those are science words. I'm not going to explain what they're here because I'm not a scientist, clearly. You know, they kind of use more, almost kind of more high energy, driving drum rhythms and these kind of tom solos, these kind of fast punk like segments. Yeah, it's just very, with the amount of stuff going on in here, like just how saturated the compositions are, they come out remarkably memorable and still like well written. So if you need something to where like you're just blazed on weed and you need a soundtrack, then here you go. I mean, hell, you could probably, like, burn it on a cassette tape or something. They're not gonna give a shit. Host listening parties. Shit, everyone's selling this thing. Even freaking Blood Music, which isn't even, like, a rock label. They're more like a synthwave outfit. They fucking uploaded the entirety of this album on their YouTube channel. And speaking of Blood Music, that actually gives me a perfect segue to my next album, Mr. Dan Terminus, with his second full-length album, Automated Refrains. Now, as I said, The Wrath of Code, his first album, was my jumping-on point to the modern synthwave movement, and so I was naturally very hyped for this one. I mentioned, like, the previous song we had, Margarita Fire, which was just this fast, driving, electronic, you know, just driving thing. I'm using the word driving a lot. I gotta expand my vocabulary. Shit. But yeah, it was pretty much exactly like the best songs from The Wrath of Code, but with even more layered, saturated production, and of course some very tasteful cowbell implementation, because who doesn't love their cowbells? So when I, like the day this came out, I went to Bandcamp, I paid money for this thing, because naturally I wanted to, and I found myself pretty satisfied with the experience. Maybe not as much as The Wrath of Code, I think I still need to give it a little time to sink, but this is definitely a strong album in its own right. If there's one thing to take away from this record, it's that overall, the tempo of this thing seems to be noticeably more, it's more mid-tempo, basically. Like, the songs aren't as aggressive, but there still are some, you know, certified bangers on this thing. But you sort of notice it as soon as, like, you hit play on that first track, Fall of the Ancient World, which kind of has, like, some of those almost kind of, like, synthy African tribal kind of feel, especially with, like, those woodwinds and everything. I'm not sure if this is, like, a flute or, like, some other, like, I don't know, an oboe or something, or maybe some other kind of woodwind, I'm not sure. But you almost kind of get the sense that you're listening to, like, almost kind of like an electronic version of, like, I don't know, Africa by Toto or something. The greatest meme song of all time. But you kind of get my point here. Like, there's a lot of that almost kind of African or maybe even Australian sort of an influence here, which is kind of funny considering this guy's French, if I recall correctly. But it definitely kind of adds its own unique vibe to the whole thing, especially when you're listening to songs like Friendship Through Clear Plastic. I'm blanking on this name right now, but yeah, Friendship Through Clear Plastic. Something. It's definitely one of the longest songs in the album, and also one of the like very floaty feeling. Like you feel like you're just soaring over everything with like the really tastefully done synth arrangements and the more sort of halftime kind of drum thing going on. You also have some more of the lengthier tracks like Grimoire Blanc. Did we mention he's French? Or Angelus. Yeah, this is a lot of really great, catchy synth arrangements. The production, it knows how to go between, like, the very more sweeping, you know, wall of sound synth chords and, you know, just the grittier driving bass with the more clean, elegant ones. Just all around, another well-done effort. Maybe if you want a more high-energy thing, I'd say start with The Wrath of Code, but if you don't mind, like, you know, a lot of mid-tempo, kind of, you know, floating ambient, almost, kind of tracks that have more of a groove to them, then Automated Refrains is definitely your jam. Now, moving on to the other one for me, Godflesh, Post-Self, their first album since their big comeback in 2014 with The World Lit Only by Fire. Now, I was kind of interested by this one just because all the press said that they were trying to go more, not back to their roots, but more to, like, the roots of the stuff that influenced them. And we heard that with, like, that opening track post the title track, in fact, where there's kind of, like, that looping guitar rhythm, kind of like the grungy leads in there, you know, just kind of looping around. And the vocal delivery, Justin Broderick is still one of the all-time great metal vocalists, but on here, he kind of almost cranks it up on that song in particular. It's one of his best vocal performances. It has more of, like, a growling, kind of staticky snarl to it, instead of the more deep sort of bellows that were on albums, you know, like A World Lit Only by Fire or Pure. And I think I said it in the episode that the song itself kind of sounded like in the realm of, like, Killing Joke or, like, the early work of Swans. Yeah, the whole album pretty much, like, bears that out, in fact. You know, you hear it on songs like Be God or Mortality Sorrow, where, like, the guitar patterns aren't, like, the super low-end 8-string guitar things, and the drums, like, they aren't as thudding. Well, I mean, they're still mechanical sounding, sure, but they don't have, like, that thud to them that sounds very of their previous record. But you kind of have some of the more floaty songs, like, as I said, like Be God or Mirror of Finite Light, where there's more of this ethereal vibe. The vocals kind of are more moody and low-key in that sense. Like, basically, if I could sum this up, this is effectively the best Jesu record that we never got. For those unaware, Jesu was, like, the project that Justin K. Broderick started, like, right after Godflesh ended. And it's just a really cool, unique experience, like, to see them try to go back to the stuff that influenced them, especially after all these years, because these guys have been around since, like, the 80s. These guys are pioneers of the genre, so for them to sort of pull in an experiment like this at this stage of the game is kind of unique to see them do. Like, they're not comfortable jogging in one place. So if you want a Godflesh experience that's more kind of ethereal and more almost kind of somber, maybe emo is the wrong word, but it's definitely a more kind of a morose, moody kind of listen. Like, this is what you, like, vibe out to when you got, like, nothing else to do. But I mean that in a great way, of course. This is just some fantastic, you know, industrial and post-metal and whatnot. But we come to the last one I have to offer, and this is the big one for me, the motherfucking album of the month that will definitely for sure be on my year-end best of list. Stay tuned for that sometime later this month. That is the new Converge record, The Dusk in Us. That's right, folks, 5 years since 2012 when they last graced us with All We Love We Leave Behind. And they turn in another excellent collection of songs that's, well, this one is kind of their, I want to say it's the most hardcore sounding record they've done in a while. But this album does, that kind of sells it short because there's such a great diversity of songwriting on this thing. I mean, when you hit play on, like, that opening track, A Single Tear, you know, it sounds, there's kind of almost like a mathiness to how the guitars are arranged. But you listen to, like, just that fast driving riffs and drum beats, and, like, especially the verse kind of double bass, like, half-time groove type of thing. It just sounds huge and sweeping and almost kind of epic in a sense. And it, you know, sets the stage fairly well for the experience to follow. Then, of course, you get other songs, like one of the previously released singles, Under Duress. Just that high-end, like, feedback-swelled swinging guitar riff that just swells and swings like this massive hulking beast, you know, as you listen to just that steady drum beat with, like, the really cool bass rhythm just kind of accentuating the whole thing. It's one of the catchiest goddamn songs they've ever written. And oh man, like, the lyrics on this thing, I mean, the lyrics on this album as a whole are great, but, like, you listen to some of the passages in here, especially, like, what's it here, it's the fear that keeps you there and it's mine that sets me free, or, like, Wouldn't need a gun if you didn't have one. Don't need you to serve or protect. Like, gee, I wonder what they could be talking about. Who, boy, it's a mystery. But yeah, just excellent songs like that. There's also another one of the mathier songs in their discography, the rather oddly titled Arkhipov Calm. Like, those guitar leads and the way the drums interact with each other is very, like, off-kilter and mathy. Of course, there's the lead-off single, I Can Tell You About Pain, just that fast, kind of very thrashy 7-4 time kind of fast DB thing, complete with just that massive chorus of, you don't know what my pain feels like. And then when it gets into, like, that bridge where the vocals go from, like, this more snarling delivery to this very, whiny panic, like, just have to leave! Just have to find my way out, just have to run! And it just sounds very panic and deranged, and where you're almost trying to get into his headspace, like, man, what the hell is going on? This guy sounds very upset and depressed about some shit, man. And the way, like, that sort of DB beat kind of slows down to a more halftime is kind of thing, so that it kind of grooves, but it still has a lot of these off-kilter accentuations, especially with, like, the ride patterns and everything. Seriously, Ben Coller's drumming on this thing is some of the best that he's done ever. But, you know, you listen to how well-arranged that song is. You have the title track, which, much like a lot of Converge title tracks, is treated more like this grand sweeping ballad. But this one opens with just these somber, you know, guitar leads with this very moaning vocals before it swells and swells more into just this slow, stomping, aggressive sort of thing. You have Murk and Marrow, which is a song that's more of a steady, it opens, oh no, wait, I'm thinking of Trigger. Murk and Marrow is the most off-kilter song. Just, you hear this very, like, stomping kind of drum beat where it's, like, you know, hitting on the bass, but then it occasionally works like a snare in there at, like, the most awkward intervals, especially with, like, all the guitar feedback, where it sounds almost like a swarm of insects, or, like, anyone remember that Meshuggah song Swarm? Imagine the guitar is kind of like that a little bit, and create just this unnerving, like, atmosphere. You don't know where to look. It's so, like, unnerving and creepy. Then, of course, you have Trigger, which, you know, has this grooving bass line to it that's, you know, playing it very steady and clean, whereas the drums are, of course, playing this, you know, groove in line with it, especially, like, the way it opens, where it's almost kind of like it's playing on, like, the drums are sort of playing on the backbeats of the rhythm, which almost kind of throws you for a loop when you're trying to, like, lock in with that cool bass groove, but it's still amazing. There's Cannibals, which is just fucking grinding as shit, which I suppose would be appropriate considering Ben's previous other band, All Pigs Must Die, had an album out last year, so, you know, the grind influence is there. And then, of course, there is just that absolutely magnificent album closer, Reptilian, which I still wish they didn't release as a single, because seriously, this thing is a fucking monster of a track, especially when you get to that chorus lyric, which is, hell, I'm pretty sure Alex and I would agree, is basically the motto of the year, quote, devils do not need a hell in order to exist.
Yep, it's called the White House nowadays.
See, I was going to say that exactly. Alex and I recognize each other. But I'm not sure what else to say about this thing. Just the fantastic lyrics, the heavy as hell, but yet still diverse songwriting. The musicianship on display is as tight as it's ever been, as furious as it's ever been. Holy shit, how are they still, like, on top after so much time together? It's fucking crazy, man. And now we head into the lightning round, so hopefully I'll try to speed through this as quickly as possible. New Cannibal Corpse record, Red Before Black. I like it. It's more Cannibal Corpse. I don't think it has as many immediately memorable songs as their previous two albums did, but it's still, like, functionally, like, again, it's Cannibal Corpse. You know, you like Cannibal Corpse? You'll like this one. The collaborative album of The Body and Full of Hell, Ascending a Mountain of Heavy Light. This one is, again, I think I like it better than the previous one they did, One Day You Will Ache Like I Ache, which, holy fuck, that's a metal as shit title. But yeah, this one, I think it's a little bit more cleanly blended overall. Like, it definitely feels like more a proper fusion of The Body's, you know, electronic influence doom tendencies with Full of Hell's just penchant for noisy grindcore, so it's worth a listen. Quicksand Interiors. Definitely a pretty solid record. I don't think it's their best necessarily, but it definitely has strong songwriting across the board. Almost at times, occasionally kind of a space rock vibe in spots. And if nothing else, it's certainly better than when other veterans of 90s post-hardcore decided to come back with an album after so many years, only to have it fucking implode into flames and be a fucking letdown. I'm looking at you, Refused. Sorry about that. And, of course, the newest Anti-Flag album, American Fall, which, you know, I really need to get around to more Anti-Flag. They were more or less my first punk band, well, them and Pennywise. I don't know what to say about this one other than it almost kind of has, like, a Celtic feeling in spots. Like, almost kind of like in the realm of, like, Dropkick Murphys or Flogging Molly, except without a funny accent. that's probably stereotyping in some way, I'm sorry. But, yeah, it's a solid enough listen, I suppose. Now we get to the stuff that's, like, lowlights. But this first one, per se, maybe isn't, like, bad. It's just kind of a disappointment for me. And that's kind of the new Tooth Grinder album, Phantom Amour. Now, like I said, way back when we did our very first, Best of the Year thing, I put Nocturnal Masquerade at my number 25 because I thought this was really damn good as far as, like, you know, sort of mainstream appealing rock and metal. Like, it definitely had enough of, like, the straightforward songwriting and catchy hooks, but also a good amount of experimentation in some of the songwriting and rhythmic construction. I almost wanted to say it's, like, some Dillinger with some Periphery and a light seasoning of Slipknot in there for good measure. But, you know, you listen to Phantom Amour. Now, naturally, I was hyped for this one, even though I didn't hear any of the songs off of it. And there was just something that threw me off as soon as I hit play on the first track, HVY. It sounded very, okay, I'm not going to say, like, they never did, like, ethereal-sounding songs. Like, their previous album had a couple of those in there, but it was just kind of, there was something off about this one, and as soon as the track list kept going more and more, I was like, oh man, this is going to be the entire rest of the album, isn't it? And yeah, like, most of this is more sort of pretty, melodic, ethereal-type jams, which isn't bad in theory. I realize this ultimately comes down to taste and what you would want out of a Tooth Grinder album, and I realize this probably makes me sound like a stan who's like, oh, I want them to just record the same album over and over again. I was like, that's not necessarily the case. Like, none of this album, this is the thing, this album doesn't sound bad necessarily, although there is one track on here that has, like, acoustic guitars and, like, banjos trying to play a ballad. I'm just like, keep it away from me. But it's like, okay, I thought the last album, I know the hype cycle around that, it was getting picked up by stuff like Revolver and Loudwire. I was like, oh, it's actually pretty cool. They're recognizing, you know, a pretty distinct, unique, up-and-coming band. But this album, with the amount of melodicness in there, it almost kind of sounds like they're trying to deliberately appeal to, like, the Loudwire and Revolver crowds. Like, this sounds like exactly the kind of thing that would be taking up nomination space next to Nothing More and Vessels. And I know it sounds kind of snarky and cynical of me, but that's just kind of where my mind went. And they're like, the thing about the experimentationness of this is, like, in microcosm, sure. Like, if we're talking from one album to another, yes, this thing does experiment. But if we're talking the grand scheme of things, this honestly just kind of sleeps into the background. Like, granted, it's not, like, as bro-y as, like, butt rock stuff, like Theory of a Dead Man or anything, thank God, but, like, still, like, you could throw this on, like, a rock radio station, like 93 Rock or something, back when that was a thing down here, and you're just gonna, like, you know, it's not even gonna throw you off all that much. I mean, there's some good songs on here. Like, my favorite track is probably, you know, of course, the most hard-hitting one on the album, Bieta. And then, of course, the song Red, which I thought was pretty good as well. And, you know, Snow is a decent ballad, all things considered, but I don't know. There's something with the over-focus on, like, the clean songwriting, where here it kind of feels like it's all just blending into each other. And it's probably also because of the production. The guitars sound a little too fuzzy. The snare is kind of a little too flat on this thing. It doesn't have, like, that periphery-esque punch of Nocturnal Masquerade. So maybe that's the thing that's kind of getting my goat here. But whatever, it is what it is, I suppose. At least they'll have fun touring with Meshuggah next month. A tour which unfortunately also includes fucking Code Orange. God damn it, what the fuck. I swear to God, that band won't stop following me everywhere. And now, it's time.
Oh boy.
Now, the weekend I listened to Bjork's Utopia, I was actually catching up on some stuff because I was away from Spotify, so I kind of let a couple albums slip by, so I just wanted to get caught up. So, you want to know what was the album I decided to listen to right after the Bjork album?
Yeah, what would that be?
Hobson, No Shame.
Oh, damn. Ooh,
there was a lot of shame involved, wasn't there?
Now, I've been aware of Hobson ever since that one year where the rap critic put Ill Mind of Hobson 4 at the top of his, like, favorite rap songs of whatever year that song came out in. And I'm aware that he was, you know, just kind of this perennial entity in the hip-hop scene, but, and, you know, I'm aware of how people, you know, mocked him. You know, they memed the hell out of lyrics like, did the man who invented college go to college? Stuff like that. But I never actually listened to one of his full lengths. So, I decided to listen to this thing. You know, this would be my first Hobson album. I'm not gonna miss words here. This is easily the worst fucking piece of crap I've heard all year. And that's including Suicide Silence. I see Alex cringing in pain or laughing at my suffering, wondering how. Now, you hit play on this thing, and you're hit with sort of this, almost kind of like a simultaneous narrative slash song called Hotel in Sydney. Apparently, I guess at some point last year, Hobson got, like, barred from performing in Sydney. I'm not exactly sure why.
He got banned from Australia or something.
Yeah, but that's basically where this album starts with, and it sort of presents it as the motif that I think was due to, like, assaulting a woman or something. But yeah, that's how he's presenting it, and it's kind of a motif that runs through, like, other songs in the album, like, I Wouldn't Do That, or All Your Fault.
Oh, boy.
But, you know, you listen to that, he has this very bitter, confrontational attitude, almost kind of like Eminem in a way, but, like, with even less self-awareness. And the self-awareness thing, we're gonna come to that in a minute. But, you know, he sounds very bitter and pissed off about this thing whenever the motif does come up. You know, a lot of the other songs are, you know, like, just braggadocious raps about how awesome he is and shit, and how real rappers can't, you know, fuck with him or whatever. But,
oh boy.
But then we get to, and I would like to point out, this album is in 17 songs, an hour and 13 minutes. That is 4 minutes shorter than the latest album from Primitive Man. But the album doesn't even start to, like, really piss you off until tracks 11 through 17, which I can only describe as a shit sandwich on decent bread, because there are two tracks on here that I actually do kind of like, and that's mostly more, like, the beats and the vibe of them. First, there's track 11, The Purge, which has this very fucking hype, amped as hell, kind of, like, symphonic driving beat to it, which, you know, it kind of gets you pumped as you're, you know, listening to the fucking Fast and Furious bars, you know, being spat by this dude. And then there's the album closer, Witch Doctor, which, you know, focuses on more of an African tribal sort of thing. Like, this is the kind of thing that, like, gets you, you know, bumping. Like, if nothing else, I would very much like to listen to, like, instrumentals of, like, some of the songs on this thing, because there are some good instrumentals on this thing. But then in between that, we get, well, obviously there's like five songs in there, you know, math and everything. But there are three strikes in here. Three strikes that, even if the other parts of the album were good, these kind of cripple them. These are like the musical equivalent of being forced to sit through The Nightmare, the Justice League press kit, and the Save Martha scenes from Dawn of Justice. First up, one of the singles from the album, Happy Ending.
Oh, God.
And yes, it's a song that's about exactly what you think it's about. Hobson trying to get laid in an Asian massage parlor. I need to stress this. This is a man who's hailed as a lyrical miracle spiritual, And here he is writing a song that is so awful and so batshit racist that even Jason Derulo and Day Above Ground are laughing at this guy. That's right. The guys who are infamous for writing Asian Girls would be looking at this guy and thinking, dude, what the fuck? And yeah, this song definitely leans in on the whole Asian stereotype thing. In the beat, in, like, the hook. Let me just recite part of this hook for you. Hello, how you doing? I can give you good massage. I can be your everything. You give me $50. If you know say nothing, I can give you sucky sucky. If you give me more money, I give you do something lucky. Yep. Just imagine all that in bad Asian stereotype, like Bonnie Swan or something. And, you know, you listen to the rest of the lyrics, like, when it's actually from Hobson's perspective. This is so cringy. There's one line in here, I'm trying to find it here, where is it? Here it is. Okay, I knew something was up with the way she was looking. Then she slid her tiny little fingertips down my spine right over my butt crack.
Oh, God.
She was massaging my booty, then go to my thighs and start touching my nutsack. Fuck yeah. Then I put a little bitty sway in my hips to let her know I like it. Something was about to go down. I'm not going to read the rest of this. You know where this is going.
And worst of all, there's a music video for that, and they show that shit in full visual.
No one needs to see that! I do not want to think about this douchebag getting laid by Asian women. In a very racist manner. In fact, it's so bad, I'm surprised there isn't a pun about Szechuan sauce in here. That sounds about like what I'd expect from the song. Now, it's not uncommon for lyrical miracle spirituals to write shit like this, but here's the thing. This gets worse when you consider that the following track on the album is a skit called No Words 2.
Oh, yes. The sequel to his other skit from his last album, No Words, where he basically just talk shit about trap rappers or
and
parody. Can
I remind you how that previous track went? Like, just to quote an excerpt, maybe Alex heard this floating somewhere around. Maybe this will jog all y'all's memory. Man, rap today fucking sucks. They ain't even using words. They just got a hard ass fucking beat to trick dumbasses like you into thinking you like this shit. From the same man who wrote, and need I remind you, then I thought, ooh, she a little freaky hoe. She said, I give it to you for cheap. You give me $125. I said, okay, here you go. Low key, I was feeling kind of awkward. She jacked me off and gave me my top first. And this man, look, I'm no fan of the future Migos, Lil Uzi Vert, Post Malone stage of trap rap, but that's obviously clear with me, but you don't get to talk shit about the Migoses of the world when your previous fucking song on this album is fucking just talk dirty to me, but with bars. But then comes strike three, and that is Ill Mind of Hobson 9, and this is basically the point where I just got fed up here. Let me see if I can find the fucking, the chorus on this goddamn thing. Oh, here we go. This is a song that, you know, returns to the motif, like he's, or rather just he's pissed off at some woman. The chorus even then goes, and I quote, our lives could have been so good, but mama had to fuck it all up. And that's why daddy don't fuck with my mama. Hell no. No, daddy don't fuck with my mama. Except more, you know, sung and very Eminem-like. And okay, the entire framing of this song is Hobson writing a letter to his hypothetical son that he can't see because supposedly the mom is a bitch. First off, I'm offended on the notion of this fucking shithead using his kid as a cipher for an argument with his mom. Like, fuck you, you shrimp dick coward. Grow some balls and fucking deal with it to her face. Fucking dragging your kid through that shit. Who the fuck kind of spineless coward does that? Swear to fucking Christ. Yeah, you're just listening to this thing like, "Oh, hello, son. I really wish I knew you. I'm your father you'll probably never be introduced to. You'll see me on TV or maybe YouTube, but now I know your mom is probably dating some new dude. So how are you liking Earth? Are you loving your existence? I wasn't at your birth because your mother made me miss it. I tried to get a visa. I applied. They denied it because your mama told the police that I beat her. She was lying." Now, here's the thing. He's very, again, much like an Eminem song, he's trying to make it sound like he's been wronged, like he's innocent in all of this, but, and all, woe is me, but he very clearly does not know how to portray this attitude at all. And this is the main criticism I've always heard of people who don't like Hobson, and I finally get it here. It's his fucking obnoxious, shitty attitude that is completely devoid of any sort of self-reflection. At no point on this album does he ever stop and think to himself, maybe I'm the problem. Never. Not once. He does not have anywhere near, like, any sense of enough self-awareness to actually have that thought cross into his mind. But he still wants you to make it think like, oh, woe is me, the world is being so mean to me. Well, that's because you bring it on yourself, you fucking piece of shit. Fuck you. I hope you get banned from every country on this goddamn planet.
Even the one you're in now.
Even the one I'm in now. Just ban him to space. And I can't waste any more vitriol on this thing. This is, I haven't been this angry at anything else I've listened to. Not even that Linkin Park album, Rest in Peace, Chester. Not even Suicide Silence. Not even Code Orange. This. This is my breaking point. Fuck this album. And I have no idea why the rap critic likes to stand for this guy.
Well,
I'm done.
Well then. Okay then. Because, well, before getting on to what I like, or continue that considering, guess what's the dumbass in this album?
Oh my god,
that'd be Mark, me!
Why? I did that so you wouldn't have to. But at least my pain is not alone here.
I figure I might as well look into this guy. And Miles was like, well, fucking Miles, we'll see what this guy's all about. And oh boy, I fucking cringed when I listened to this album. I was sitting there mad as fuck listening to this bullshit. Even the first half is like, oh no, woe is me, poor Hobson, man, shut your dumb ass up. I hated every song in this. I listened to something like, I felt nothing. Maybe the beats might be alright, but I wouldn't go back to them anyway for them. It's like you paint this narrative that makes you feel like, oh man, my woman did me wrong, she been hoeing around. Ain't you been fucking around too? You stupid motherfucker, you doing that shit as well. We feel sorry for you? Nigga, fuck you. I don't give a shit about your well-being or how poor you. And at first I thought about Hobson, like, okay, I get the idea of this motherfucker. Execution of him is fucking horrible. He talks so much out of his ass. He's basically like the rapper that mostly a lot of angry white boys will listen to that say, I listen to rap, but if I do, it's Hobson. It's basically that type of shit.
Yeah, this is basically like if politics with the Z was a real person.
Boy, and yeah, you said all about happy ending. Like, God, I don't listen to a song anymore. Happy ending. I got a bad ending. Listen to that shit. But I'm just gonna end it right here. This album is trash. It's garbage. I fucking hate this album. I'd never want to listen to another one of his shit again. Fuck this dude. Fuck this dude. And you know what? I'm glad your former label kind of broke up because, you know what? The pocket broke up because of you. Because, like, you know, his former label, Funk Volume, kind of broke up, kind of went to funk and went on his own. But you know what? Yeah. But you know what? Yeah, fuck it.
Yeah, fuck him.
Let's move on before we get into aneurysm.
Let's move on to the stuff that I actually like. And speaking of, and since we're in XXL Freshman, you actually forgot one to mention. A surprise mixtape from Kamehameha. Yeah, her. Kamehameha. So anyway, this year's XXL picks. Kamehameha have at least one of her, wait, one or two of mixtapes that's supposed to release for her major album debut, major label debut, called Before I Wake. And I'm gonna say, this mixtape is some pretty solid shit. Like, I know, like, I read during her like her last mixtape of Goodnight in the Ghetto released last year, it does have a bit of contrast with us since I heard that one was more laid back, relaxed. But this one, it's like that as it does. It does touch upon her like vulnerability stuff, like, you know, about her career, in the rap game, you know, mental health and wellness, you know, and all she having around her, like, you know, trying to climb up the shine, you know, trying to shine where she is. It's actually, it's only 10 tracks, in about like 30 minutes or so. I think it's a pretty decent mixtape. I really do dig the potential of this. It's just definitely that, you know, G funk West Coast sound that you will listen to in your car and just bump while you're cruising around. Like, this is definitely, I mean, you get the G funk sound, some sample based stuff. Like, you eat, like, even some sample based stuff from even one song on here called Leave 'Em. Leaving with samples of the Crowd TLC song Creep, which is a song about how, you know, leave that asshole boyfriend of yours. In other words, that lady that was dating Hobson. Yeah, do that shit. And I gotta say, Kamehameha is, I mean, Kamehameha is definitely talented in here. She is definitely a rapper that I can, you know, keep my eye on. Especially right now, we get a lot of notes from, you know, few rappers, like, you know, like her, Rap City, even Cardi B. I do feel like she she's definitely somebody that will get her shine coming on soon. And this mixtape, it's very solid. I can't wait to see what her album will be, hopefully, well, after that other mixtape. So yeah, you should have saw it. Album number two, another XXL freshman that I'm not all that eager about, PNB Rock. You know, that guy along with a boogie that jumped a little B a month back.
Oh yeah, fuck him too.
Yeah, him and I can see I know nobody cover this shit because nobody get. So anyway, he got his major debut album, which I thought was a mixtape at first, but it's an album, called Catch These Vibes. Instead of called Catch These Hands.
Gee, that makes so much more sense.
Yeah, now, even if that shit didn't happen, I just gotta say, wow, this is boring. I mean, it's basically a bunch of your generic trap with some sing-songy flows, and it also does this yodel, is kind of yodel auto-tune yodel thing, like, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, like that shit.
Oh boy,
I don't know. The shit sounds really, like, most of the shit sounds really forgettable, to be completely honest. I mean, I struggle trying to listen, I could listen to it again, but it's like, no, I got bored already listening to it the first time. I mean, hell, if, like I said, that's just kind of, well, standard trap shit with some shit that I say, it's kind of interesting, but not enough to go back for the whole album for it. It's like, nah, I am not feeling this shit at all, like... Even like, yeah, maybe because he got nothing interesting to say. It's like with a Boogie's album I reviewed like a couple months back. This shit does not interest me in the slightest. It's like either about relationship shit or some bullshit. I don't really care. I really don't care. And I'm just gonna leave it at that. This album is, you could just, if you like, you might as well say, you might borrow from a friend and say, hey, you know, you can keep, you borrow from a friend. It's like, okay, you can keep this shit. And I want to rip it off. So you can take that back. And now an album that technically it's actually a remix album of an album last year that I absolutely loved. No Worries with Yes Lord Remixes.
Oh yeah, I forgot about
so,
that.
Yeah, so since it's a remix album, I mean, there's not much to say since, well, you know, except I will say that it's still got you know, some decent, I got some good grooves in there, with different beats from Knowledge. I will say this shit is kind of solid. I keep saying that the one remix I love from the album is the best one remix. I keep playing over and over again because I love that version now since the way how it sounds so soulful, especially when I watch that part that always watch that the video for Scared Money, but the second part is, you know, the remix best one, which I'm like, I was so shaken with that song because it is so gorgeous. Now I will say that one remix I like is the Like This remix, which I thought that shit sounded very different. I will say one remix that I'm kind of very not that hot on is which is Scared Money, the remix of a song that I actually like, the original's like, and like, it's not I don't think it's awful. I just feel like I'm not feeling as much as the original one was. We'll say as a whole, this remix album, I'll say it's a solid remix album. I mean, I will say I'll stick to the original product, which I always will, but yeah, this one is not so bad. It's definitely like, you know, it's like, you know how I said, like, No Worries is like Mad Villain for R&B. Well, you know how Mad Villain made their somewhat remixed CD which I'm not calling Mad Villain 2 because that is not a sequel. That is a fucking remix album. This is definitely like that. Yeah. And finally, the last one I'm going to talk about is the Tyler Qualley album, Radio Silence.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, now, people know Taco, he is an artist. You know, he's a very, you know, conscious rapper that always talks about, you know, the shit happening around today. And I'm going to say it's, you know, it hasn't changed. The man still does his thing. Does his thing on the record. He does talk, he touches some issues here and there. And I will say, it's definitely a Tyler Qualley album. It's very good. Very good. I do feel like fans of his will definitely be pleased with this. And of course, the one track I do like was the one Rob mentioned on my Twitter, which he says the 5 Magic Words featuring Anderson .Paak and K. Trinata. And that's Trap Light. And spoiler, I do like that song a lot. I really do like this song a lot. But like I said, the production in here is definitely something you hear I talk of. It's like, you know, the hip hop you hear back in, you know, 2004 when we still hear stuff, you know, from him or Common or Kanye West before it awaits. So I will say another song that I do like is All of Us, which actually has a verse from Jay Electronica, another rapper who
whose album we don't know we don't know comes out. I do think that there's some touching stuff on here, that some touching stuff, like a song called "She's My Hero," which is, I heard, a song inspired by a girl named Brescia Meadows, which reading here is a sad ass song. A teenager who last year shot and killed her. A teenager who, hold up, actually, not sad, but more like a flip thing. I don't know, like, I must have messed up my notes. It's about a teenager who shot and killed her allegedly abusive father as he slept with. Just like, okay, that's actually kind of good, because fuck that guy. I will say the weirdest thing about the album is the feature list. I mean, on one hand, you got Anderson .Paak, Kitchenada, okay. Jay Chomko, okay. Be Chicago Kid, alright. Bilal, alright. Robert Glasper, okay. Rick Ross, okay. Yeah. That's and then there's also Waka Flocka Flame.
What?
Waka Flocka Flame. That's the other Tyler Quayle album. I didn't notice too. Look at this. I'm like, he's on a song called Chips, which is I guess whatever, but I will say like on this, on this 11 track album, which again that's solid, because you know, I do like keep shit minimal this time. It's like, yeah, this album is definitely, you know, it's definitely what Quayle do is what Quayle does, and it's definitely instead of something that I do feel like, it's definitely something that, you know, his slower fan base would definitely fuck with. And that is it.
Whew. And with that, we have reached what is basically the last album roundup we're doing for the month, I think.
Yeah.
Kind of defeats the purpose of doing one for December, because by then we'll have done best of the year, and, I mean, unless we find some way to talk about the Eminem album somewhere, but, maybe, but not guaranteed. So now we just have to clean house and get the hell out of here. So Alex, where can they find you on the internets?
Aura of Azure, literally anywhere and everywhere on the internet.
Mark, what about you?
As usual, on Twitter and CuriousCat, aka Mac2HybridMedia, and on my site, The Mind of Hybrid One, at thehybridone.wordpress.com.
And as for me, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and CuriousCat, at Rob Barracuda. Email me, robert@surrealresolution.com, if you have any inquiries or just memes. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Google Play and iTunes. New audio-only episodes usually go up by Wednesdays. Video usually goes up by Fridays on the official YouTube channel of Surreal Resolution, which you can find by searching, you know, Surreal Resolution on the YouTube. Duh. Subscribe and hit the bell tab so you're always notified when new episodes of the podcast immediately go up. Be sure to follow on Twitter at Surreal Reso. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitch, where we're streaming pretty much every day. And, of course, www.surrealresolution.com and decibelboost.surrealresolution.com if you want to go just for this podcast specifically. I'm not going to bother recapping all the shit, because this is just a random episode for the month. So, of course, shout out to the producer, Mr. E, for graciously letting me use his music for this podcast. And thank you for joining us for another edition of the Monthly Album Roundup. We'll see you soon with possibly another regular episode, but for sure, sometime in the next couple of weeks, expect a best of the year countdown thing. So, take care, kids.